All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Pony Sync for whatever the date is. 26th of September, 2018. We have Gordon and Joe and me here. Apologies for the late start. All right. As Joe and Gordon are probably painfully aware, I'm incredibly behind. So where should we start?
I'm behind too, but we have some, let's see, I'm not aware of any RFCs, but that doesn't mean we don't have them. Let's see.
We have one function argument alias.
Yeah, I just saw that.
From Malte. I'm so behind that I haven't even seen this yet. I apologize. Ah. An optional clause to function arguments that gives the argument a local alias. That's interesting. So this, so the story here for people listening later is that Pony is very aggressive about disallowing shadowing, and sometimes that can be annoying in the sense that you want to sometimes reuse function names as variables in other functions. Sometimes you want to reuse names in function arguments. And this proposal says, you have a public API for named arguments that gives a name to something that is different from the name that the function then sees, which is very interesting. So the example is new create name string as name prime.
So I was going to mention something, but the author of this RFC mentioned that my suggestion on the mailing list about this a while ago. So it says, it's been brought up occasionally on the mailing list with Joe McElvain suggesting a change that an argument named prime could be filled with a named argument name, provided that no parameter is using the unprimed name. So that's something I've just basically just in cast. When we're talking about named arguments, you know, if you're using named arguments and you forget the prime, that Pony could just like kind of, yeah, you can leave off the prime and just have a little bit nicer named arguments. As I thought, this was the main area where this caused a problem.
Right.
Just like that the small, you know, if you make an implementation change of like your function now, or your class now has a field with the same name as an argument you had before. So now you add a prime to it and it's like a breaking change for, you know, very little right. benefit. So that was kind of my suggestion. The author of the RFC says the solution does not seem to solve the problem of primed arguments appearing in error messages and documentation. And it could be argued that it makes the language harder to understand. I think both of those are true.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I mean, I still kind of feel like named arguments is really the main place where this is a problem. And the error messages and documentation, it's like, yes, but it's not a huge deal. But I do agree that what I'm suggesting is a little bit weird in that it's like, you know, the prime doesn't matter in some cases and it does matter in others. And that's kind of weird.
Right. Interestingly, from sort of a math point of view, I find your suggestion very appealing that you say name and it says, yeah, I'm just going to call that name prime is totally reasonable from a math point of view. But I do understand seeing it as a separate identifier. Just to make sure that we talk about the fact that other things are possible, we can relax shadowing constraints, right? Shadowing was made extremely constrained because there have been over time many instances of shadowing being major bugs in production software. That doesn't mean this level of shadowing constraint is the right level, right? Maybe it should be loosened to some degree. I don't know.
Yeah, it would be pretty weird. So looking at the example in detail design on line like 46, if you're looking at line numbers, it would be pretty weird, I think, to say that in this constructor we have an argument with the same name as, I'm not even sure how we would disambiguate, I'm kind of, you know, one of those people who thinks that shadowing prohibitions are a little bit too strong in Pony, but in this case, for cases like this, I don't even know how in the compiler we can properly disambiguate between the two. I mean, maybe in a constructor we can say that, well, we know that the field hasn't been assigned anything yet, and so until the field is assigned, we take, you know, I'll use cost instead of name, because it's less confusing. But we see the identifier cost, and the field cost has not been assigned yet, then we assume they're talking about the function argument. But if the field has already been assigned, you assume you're talking about the field. I mean, we could do that for a constructor. It wouldn't really work for other functions.
Right.
Overall, it seems like that does have the potential to make things really confusing.
Yeah, that's interesting. So for constructors, one of the things that languages do for constructors sometimes is to say, if a constructor argument has the same name as a field, it is implicitly assigned to that field without having to do anything. So in this example, you would say new create name string equals empty cost i64 equals zero, and the implementation would just be none.
Yeah, I think that can work very well, especially in cases where the field is a bare rather than let.
Right.
And when the field is public.
And you wanted to say it's actually, oh, well, I want to do some cleanup on the argument first or some, you know, constraining, you know, then you have to reassign it in that case. And it gets weird that you couldn't use let in those cases.
Yep, that's very true. And I think that Gordon's point that it has to be public in order to have a sensible name is interesting too, because otherwise you end up saying, oh, well, then you have to use underscore name, and well, you can't. So that's interesting too.
So another thing that other languages do for this on constructors is you'll have some special notation saying that, okay, yes, I want to opt into, go ahead and eagerly assign this to the field of the same name with minimal fuss of like basically trying to be terse about it. I've seen in some cases, like, they'll use like the at symbol. So, you know, if you wanted to talk about how terse you could get with this, you could write like new create at name equals empty string, comma, at cost equals zero.
Right.
And then it'd say, okay, well, I already know the type because I look it up in the field type, and I'll go ahead and assign it because you use this special notation that says assign it. And then you can get really nice and terse, which is something that I would want from a feature like this.
Right.
And a quibble that I have with the one proposed in the RFC is that it's, it is much lengthier by adding the as and the identifier there again.
Yeah. I sympathize with that.
Yeah.
I sympathize with that.
I have one idea. How about we relax shadowing only in constructors and only for method names? So we don't allow shadowing field names. The case that I've run into this problem most is when I have a getter for a non-public field.
Right.
Then I can't have the same name in the constructor parameter.
Well, that is damned annoying. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I think relaxing, I don't think it really addresses the point in this RFC, but I do agree that if we're going to start talking about where can we relax shadowing constraints, I think on getters is a great place to do it, especially because in Pony, if you just try to reference the value of a getter, if you try to reference the identifier of a getter, it says you can't, you know, reference a method without calling it.
Yep.
you know, you have to curry it if you want to try to pass it around, right? So in that case, like, it's pretty unambiguous already. And I would even say you wouldn't need to restrict it just to constructors, in my opinion. The only place where it gets more confusing is if it's a callable type.
Right.
That has an apply method on it.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Just to make sure we're covering all the bases, another thing we can do is to say that accessing members, whether they're fields or methods, requires this dot annotation. So you have to say this dot. This is very much how like TypeScript does things, where you would say this dot name equals name. And then there is no out of lexical scope, out of function scope shadowing required. And in some sense, then being very strict about shadowing is natural in that you're only, the only shadowing that would ever happen would be in function scope anyway. That's a pretty heavyweight change though.
Yeah, it's a big change. I kind of, you know, if we were starting, you know, the language today, I would be pretty in favor of something like that. Although I think this dot is pretty heavy handed. I think something I like about, for example, CoffeeScript is the way it does this with like, it uses at for this case, where you say like at is an abbreviation for this dot.
Okay. Yeah.
And if we had some kind of symbol that represented that, like, I mean, if we were designing from scratch today, that's kind of what I would lean toward and say that anytime you're talking about a field, it's always decorated with this symbol in front of it. And you say unambiguously, this is a field, and you know that. And that, you know, in some ways, it's going to prevent more bugs than what we currently have with the shadowing constraint, right? Because you're always talking about fields always look like this.
Right. Yeah. Or even methods, right?
In practice, like, that's kind of what I end up doing, honestly. You know, in practice, in my Pony code, I almost always end up with my fields named as with an underscore in front. Because, you know, the only thing is, like, if you're trying to have public fields, that's not how you can do it. But public fields, you know, they can't be, you know, used in interfaces and traits and you know, they're only kind of useful for you have this like kind of like lightweight struct kind of not pony struct, but like you know, data structure kind of thing that's just all public fields. So it's something I kind of do in Pony anyway, is like underscore is always what my fields are, and then I have getters for them. But it's just kind of, there's a lot of, I don't know, overhead with manually defining those getters when I need them and all that stuff.
There is indeed, yeah. Yes, indeed. And that's another thing that we could do, of course, is sugar getters and setters. That's very much the way that C# has gone, for example, is with sugar getters and setters and saying, look, a field definition isn't a field definition. It's a property definition, which may be implemented either with methods or with a backing, with just the backing store. It's interesting to think about what that looks like. Another thing, not to stray too far, is that I think we could extend traits and interfaces to allow specifying that a field must exist on the type in order for it to implement that trait or interface. And
still be able to use it from the trait or interface?
Right. And so you could use it from the trait and interface, and then an implementing type must have it and still get good compilation. So that's a route we could go down at some point, because I think that's interesting. That's not this RFC, obviously, not to distract too much.
Yeah. So... yeah, I mean, coming back to this RFC, I mean, my general take is, and I can maybe try to summarize this in a comment on the RFC later, but my general take is sort of like, I don't like that this, you know, this thing that is for, I think it's ostensibly for convenience, you know, extending the amount of making it less terse, basically, and more more to achieve what you're doing. Kind of the that I have with it.
I'm sort of wondering if the right thing to do might just be to relax shadowing constraints and say that you're allowed to shadow members with locals, either parameters or locals. Okay. In that those are always still available with this dot.
Oh, with this dot. Okay, got it.
Right, you can still get to everything. So in the example here, it would just, the constructor, in just this very simple sense of it's guaranteed not to be a breaking change, and maybe it's still sufficient for bug prevention. Maybe it is. The constructor would just be name and cost, and the implementation would be this dot name equals name and this dot cost equals cost.
I think the downside to that is that the error messages you'll get if you don't think to do the this dot name equals is, would it be rather confusing? Like, so let's just say you tried to do name equals name. You'd get an error message about how you can't reassign a parameter.
Yeah. I think one thing we could do is simply check for such things and say, does such a field exist? And say, do you mean this dot name?
That's fair. Yeah. Yep.
And maybe that's a nice change, actually. I don't know.
I also like that.
Yeah? Okay. Oh, hey, it's Matthias. How you doing?
Awesome.
Yeah. So I think that's good. It avoids this. So did you say only in constructors or in general?
I was thinking in general, allow shadowing members on the theory that members are still available through this dot.
Right.
And that would mean you could shadow a field name. You could also shadow a method name.
Right.
So yeah, you could say, even though you had a constructor new hungry in the second example, you could have a Boolean somewhere, you know, hungry bool, and that would be all right in the sense that hungry is still available through wombat.hungry.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think we need to, like, this also requires educating people about it in the tutorial.
Yeah, it sure does. Yeah, yeah. Just relaxing that without being clear in the tutorial would be a disaster. That's a good point.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a good recommendation to make. I can add a comment to this RFC to that effect, saying we discussed it on the call, and yep.
Cool. That's great. And I think that gives Malte the end goal, and it's less verbose, and I think it works across the board, and I think it's not that bad in terms of what bugs get allowed, in the sense that we still don't allow shadowing locals, which is generally speaking the worst source of bugs. Yeah, that seems fairly comfortable.
Okay, yeah, I'm typing up that comment now, but feel free to move on to other things.
Cool. All of the other RFCs are stuff that's languishing, I'm afraid. Perhaps we need to go through that. There's quite a few things that eventually I would like to get back to. For example, Malte has one that has been pending for literally 2 years now on dropping then from the try else clause. And I still think that's a good idea and we ought to get to it, but I think maybe we won't get to it tonight. All right. Let's pop over to pull requests on the compiler. We have 2887, which is from Theo. Uh, Wow, that's just a really straightforward fix. anyone have any arguments on that? I think that's a natural
merge. Go ahead, yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm just going to merge that one.
86 is also pretty trivial.
Okay, great. Actually, can someone else click merge as GitHub has decided that I'm not signed in?
I do.
Thank you. Oh, yep. 2086 should definitely be merged. Thank you, Gordon. Also, I'll embarrass Theo when he's not on the call. Theo finished up a 6-month internship at MSR last week. He was fantastic. General feedback from my boss and my erstwhile boss's boss was, is he really sure he needs an education? Maybe he should just come work here full time. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So 2883 is not.
It's not building on OS X due to some issue in the Travis CI code we had. I didn't rebase on master yet.
Ah, okay.
So it's expected, and like it's just because LLVM.
Ah, okay.
That wasn't properly installed, so it's fine.
Okay, cool. In general, this is clearly a good idea, right? So, we should merge this as soon as we can, as it builds. This clearly the right thing to do.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna do.
Cool. Oh, and the same goes for 2080. In fact, 2082 has passed.
Yeah, that was built before Homebrew got a new LLVM.
Oh, I see. So maybe we shouldn't merge it on the theory that there's a problem, or is it actually okay to merge?
It's okay to merge.
Okay, let's go for it then. In fact, maybe we should just merge both of them. If this is an LLVM problem where it's a sort of a temporary Homebrew problem,
yeah,
well,
yeah.
I don't know.
I can just rebase the other one on master and it
okay, cool. Excellent.
Be fixed.
There's a do not merge on 2830, but it sounds like oh dear. Oh, okay. So Dipin has put a hold on that. Okay. I get it. So we have 2818, which is Mark's discussion needed during sync. Okay.
Seems has some conflicts now with the README, but we can easily adapt this.
So this was one that I think Sean wanted to have a, you know, I added this during a previous call when Sean wanted to have a discussion about Open Collective and how, like, how we were going to say we used funds from it and how we were going to actually use them, you know, it's okay. The same issue. But we had a little bit of chat about that in the previous sync call that I attended. I'm not sure how many weeks ago that was, sorry. But yeah. Let me ask Sean what he thinks the next steps on this are.
Okay, cool. That sounds good.
Says as nice we would use it for swag.
Oh.
And possibly server costs.
Server costs would be good.
Yeah.
Anything like I know we're paying for domains now. So there's a bit this in here. I'd be happy to sign up to contribute to this, obviously. So if people think this is the right way to do it, that's awesome. I'm all for it. and we can take it from there. In some sense, I would prefer, this sounds a little awkward, but I would prefer not to have a say in what direction we go with this, and whatever direction people want to go, I will happily contribute to.
Anyway, I left a comment to ask Sean about what he thinks the next step should be, since I think he was...
All right, cool. That sounds good. Lib LLVM submodule. So this is from Wink. It's do not merge. I don't know what the status is. Is there...
So I, as far as I followed it, I think it's basically ready.
But okay.
Just wanted feedback on the approach. And how we build it, it's basically, we have two make files now. He's working with symlinks. The one is building a pony with a system LLVM.
Okay.
And the other one... with the submodule vendor LLVM from
right.
Our ponyline.org.
Okay. That means I should probably bring up a terrible subject, which I'm sure we won't solve or anything, but just to throw it out there, which is, should we be switching to one of the make file generator systems, for example, CMake. Now, I'm not going to go out there and say that CMake is my favorite thing in the world. But
it plays nicely with LLVM.
It plays nicely with LLVM. That is exactly it. It plays nicely with LLVM. It means we can generate stuff on the Windows side and build with MS Build rather simply.
So
Gordon, what do you think?
Well, I have tried to write the Windows build system so that it can be easily adapted to build on Linux as well.
Ah.
It's okay. Using a system called WAF, which is just a Python library. So I can try and experiment with building on Linux.
Okay, cool. The thing I would like to make sure, if we go down that route, again, I don't mean to make any false claims about CMake, but... In compiler world, CMake is more and more, because of LLVM, I don't want to make any other claims, but as Matthias says, because of LLVM, it's becoming a thing people are leaning on. So although I'm perfectly happy with WAF, maybe we should look at both and see which is sort of more convenient for us. I don't know. What do you think?
Totally.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, it should be possible to do it on Windows with CMake.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Maybe one, I don't know if you like that kind of stuff, but in the JVM world, there's the very big IDE called IntelliJ from Japan.
Yep.
It's really good. And they also have a C Lion, which is a fork of that for C, which is also pretty good and supports CMake from the ground up.
Ah, very interesting. Okay.
And Visual Studio on Windows now supports CMake pretty well.
Oh, okay.
That's also interesting. So I must admit, I mostly use VS Code, not Visual Studio or CLion. I have used both. But having support for IDEs is great, actually.
Yeah, I mean, just my two cents is that I get annoyed every time I have to use CMake, but that's probably my problem and not CMake's problem.
Yeah, I must admit I'm the exact same way.
You know,
so I'm here saying maybe we should consider CMake with also a lump in my throat, but that's all right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the position where I'm not going to stand in the way of CMake if it has all these benefits, you know, in terms of compatibility with other stuff and integration with LLVM. But at the same time, I don't think that we should, you know, in the context of this pull request, I think if we're in favor of the approach that Wink has taken, I don't think we should say, okay, we're not going to merge this, go back and rewrite and CMake.
Oh, I completely agree. Yeah, that's clearly a separate task. Definitely. Thank you for pointing that out. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I also think that the route to rendering LLVM, like we should really follow, and maybe I don't know if we want to merge this. Maybe we need to have a closer look and also look at what it does to the CI.
Okay.
But I think we should kind of join forces on this one, because it might solve lots of problems.
Okay.
For installation and stuff. Okay. Making that more streamlined. I have basically no opinion on using submodule or just putting the source code directly in here, or using some subtree or whatever Git feature there is.
Yeah, the three options are basically submodule, subtree, and subrepo, and all of them are, bad is a fair word. I was going to try to be more diplomatic, but that's just the truth. They're all bad. Yeah. So in some sense, I lean towards submodule in that it is no more bad than the others and is more standard. That's really it.
I'm in favor of merging this. I did try it locally and things seem to work as they should. If others are good with it, I'm good to merge this one.
Okay. Tell you what, let's take off do not merge. Let's take off needs discussion during sync, and let's just ask Wink if he's okay with merging this.
Yep.
And I totally haven't investigated how this interacts with the Windows build at all. Does anybody know details about that?
I'm sorry, Gordon. I didn't even think of that. I apologize.
No worries.
I'm afraid I've been building on WSL lately.
Well, I had an interesting discussion with someone who was desperate for GCC on Windows the other day. So.
Oh, wow. That's a interesting thing. Can I point them at Clang?
Yeah.
Clang is working rather well, not even just on WSL, but on straight Windows these days. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Even things like you can set up VS Code and Visual Studio to use it and things like that.
Well, yeah, we could investigate using Clang on Windows then.
Yep.
So as far as I can see, Gordon, it's only makefile changes. And it should be...
effectively transparent?
Yeah. Right. But this is an optimistic, uninformed statement.
Okay, well, if I have some time in the next few days, I'll pull that branch and see if there's any impact.
Yeah, that would be great.
Awesome.
Cool.
So since we're past the halfway point, I wanted to bring our attention to 2782, selfishly.
Excellent.
Sylvan, since I have you here, I just want to kind of pin you down and torture you until you say yes to this.
Okay, cool.
All right, so just
782 pointer offset is private.
Yes. So yeah, you did respond back in June to this, and I agreed with what you said, and I'd kind of already fixed that issue locally. Keeps the current private offset function, but adds a new public offset function that only returns a pointer tag.
Oh. Well, I don't think that's problematic.
Okay.
It's just that you need both, right? You need a private offset because we have some gruesomeness in the way that array deals with pointer.
Yep.
But I don't think I see a problem with that. Am I missing something?
No. I think it's fine. I just wanted to check in with you before continuing.
Ah, Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. This is, yes, as long as there's a separate one, because we need the one that returns the ref, but if there's a separate one that's public that returns a tag, that's totally fine with me.
Yep.
All right, cool. You successfully pinned down.
Okay, yeah, we can resume our previously scheduled stuff, or if anybody else has other things they want to bring up, they can. I just wanted to make sure I mentioned this while we were.
All right, cool. So we have some pending PRs that are pending for quite some time needs discussion during sync. Are there any that people want to talk about right now? All right. A fairly impressive collection of them are actually from Paul Leiter. Some of them are from Benoit. Has anyone seen Benoit recently? I have not been around, so I don't know how around Benoit has been.
I think a lot of us have not been very around recently.
Yeah.
At least that applies to me and you and Benoit.
Yeah.
But he promised to be back in like days or weeks.
Ah, excellent. Cool. So that's much like me.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm also betting on him.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Excellent. Glad to hear that there's no, nothing more difficult for Benoit. That's excellent. So let's just punt on these. I'm going to also embarrass Paul while he's not here in that he is going to come do an internship at MSR starting in January. And he'll be starting a PhD program at Imperial, working with Sophia Drosopoulou on languages and type systems. So I think this is fabulous news. All right. In that case, let's pop over to issues.
Do we want to talk at all about the mod versus remainder stuff that came up recently?
Sure. Yeah.
We can, yeah.
Or do you think that's clear-cut enough that we don't need to discuss it here?
I'm afraid that I'm a little I'm entirely out of context. What is this mod versus remainder stuff?
I was just looking at arithmetic stuff with a division by zero and partial arithmetic, and it occurred to me that the modulo we use, the SRAM, URAM, FRAM, whatever, remainder LLVM parts, and they actually do a remainder, and there's some, it might be just a little bit picky or whatever, but there's a difference between remainder and modulo.
Okay.
In that they have different, that the result has a different sign based on, like, I think, like, I wrote it down in the general. Modulo have the results have the sign of the divisor, and remainder results have the same sign as the dividend.
Okay.
And we actually do the latter. So we do remainder, but call it modulo mod, and in the tutorial, it's called modulus. I would just wanted to suggest to rename it to REM.
Ah.
And remainder, so it's more clear.
Okay, let me just have a quick look about how C does it.
I think C.
C. Mod is implementation defined. That's great. What is that actually for C?
I think there's a Wikipedia article that Joe cited.
Yeah, the famous modulo operation Wikipedia article, probably. That's the one that LVM cites.
Yeah.
Okay. So Ada, of course, being rather principled, has both modern REM. Okay, so the percent operator in the majority of languages has the meaning of Ada's remainder, not of Ada's modulus.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense. In fact, it is Clojure has both. CoffeeScript has a double modulus, which is mod, and a single percent, which is rem. Common Lisp, of course, has both. Fortran, in its genius, has mod and modulo. And they are of different meanings. That's pretty awesome. Haskell has both. Julia has both, but with the percent meaning rem.
Okay. I guess they use the same LLVM.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Intrinsics.
Indeed. Okay, so this is a really good point. It seems to me that possibly the right thing to do is not to rename mod. Well, no, I'm saying that wrong. Is to do what you say and rename mod as rem, but introduce a mod that is in fact mod.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, good point. Should I go the RFC route? Or do you think it's so obvious that it should be a principle of least surprise?
It feels like principle of least surprise to me. What does everyone else think?
I would tend to agree with that, although I'm a little bit I guess what I would maybe recommend is start with a principle of least surprise change that renames it as REM. Updates the tutorial accordingly to use the correct terminology, and then as a separate change, come back and add mod, in part because the breaking change is a little bit more obvious. Like for anyone who is relying on like implementing their own mod sugar, which is probably not that many people, right? Like if anyone's implementing their own mod method in their own library, it's probably not that many people. And this will be kind of an obvious breakage, right? It'll say, okay, well, there's no rem method defined where you tried to use this modulus operator, or right. The remainder operator now, the percent operator. But if you add mod, and it's telling you, that same thing. I don't know. I think it makes it less obvious, the breaking change, as compared to just like doing it as two separate changes and probably putting the other one through like an RFC, because wouldn't we also want an operator for it, like the double percent perhaps?
I don't think we have an operator right now.
Wait, for what? For the what we now call mod, we have the percent operator, right?
Yeah.
I'm saying for introducing, so we can rename mod to rem as a principle of least surprise change, and then if we want to introduce like a double percent operator and a mod method, that can happen as a separate change, maybe via RFC.
Yeah. Good point.
Good point.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Okay.
We all say grimacingly as the overhead increases.
That'd be it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I in general think it's better to do as two changes. If we want to skip RFC for the second change, we can talk about that. But I think making it as two changes is going to make it more obvious to people what changed.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. If no one else has anything to bring up, I just wanted to that. So there is a long outstanding bug that happens to I can't even rephrase that error. It's really hard. So I hit this wall and had to build workarounds, and someone else on ISC also hit that wall. We're building a rather involved reactor system on Pony.
Okay.
And it basically boils down to the existing pull request 1888 by Paul.
Okay.
And so these are fixes fix to 1887, but I think there's also a pull request for this one. Where is this one? I think the other one that fixes 1887 is the pull request 2503. And
2503?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Was not looking at it roughly. I was not 100% sure as to how far this is good, or what should be done.
Okay.
But it would be really great if we could move those forward.
Yep, I see your point.
Yeah. Just wanted to raise your attention.
Okay, cool.
I didn't see any general veto or...
These are both Paul's fixes, and so what I'll do is I'll just ping him and see if he can come along for the next sync or comment.
Yeah.
Because that's a really good point.
So if it would just be me...
2503 is only held up by a missing AST3.
Oh.
Like, Benoit asked for an AST3, and so maybe, but Matthias, if you can add the AST, you could pick up this branch, add the AST3, and pick it up from there, because I don't think Paul had any interaction with this since Benoit made that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I totally can.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Let's go down that route. That sounds good.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that was maybe outstanding about this was the second, my first comment on the thread, which was, basically asking Paul about if he ever came to a conclusion about the concern that he voiced in an earlier comment. Worth noting, this may interact with auto recovery such that despite decaying to ref, you can still get an ISO back. So, I guess the other outstanding concern on this is, does this change introduce a soundness issue when combined with auto recovery?
And that's for the change in 1888?
No, the change in 2503, I think.
Change in 2503. Thank you. My apologies, I'm having trouble loading things. Okay.
I also get the GitHub unicorn.
Okay, it's gone away from me, so you might be able to get it now too. I'm glad you knew exactly what I was talking about though. Okay, let's look at the 1887 comment. Because there wasn't an answer from Paul on that. Okay. Oh, poor GitHub. There it goes. Right. So we don't actually have an answer on this.
Yeah, so unless the answer is obvious to you, Sylvan, after looking at, I mean, the changes in 2503 are not big. If the answer is obvious to you by looking at the changes, then that's one thing. Otherwise, we'll have to get Paul to weigh back in on this, or somebody to weigh back in on this after doing some more analysis. I don't think I know enough to answer this about how auto recovery interacts with this.
Downcast ISO trend receiver to ref. Okay. Here we go. So if it's a function, if it's a box function, specifically in lookup nominal, I'm afraid this is not obvious to me. I apologize.
That's fine. I mean, it's not obvious to any of the rest of us either, so it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So specifically what we're doing is saying on a ridge, and the key is that it's on AST type. Let's have another quick look at this. It's looking for son of a. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. No. Okay. This actually makes a lot more sense than I thought it did. I apologize. We're a little over time, but I'll say a thing, and then we can at least have somewhere to go from here, which is that what's happening is this is not on an implementation. This is actually on the call site. That's why it was non-obvious, is that I was thinking about this absolutely backwards. So at the call site, we have determined that the receiver is isolated or transition. And in that case, when we instantiate box, a box call on it, which in some sense is trivial on transition, but is not trivial on ISO in that it will require auto recovery in order for the thing to type check. What we want to do is say, oh, on that receiver, we are going to find nominal and type param reference type annotations and smash them down to ref. Similarly, we're going to look through arrows and find those and either downcast them or smash them down as we go. The only thing that I'm concerned about is we're calling this on a ridge during lookup nominal. Therefore, a ridge is a type. Oh, that's good. So we're taking some original type and smashing it, and we're using that smash type in order to do a reification while not altering the call site. This change is good. This is fine.
Okay, so it doesn't interact poorly with auto recovery then?
In fact, the opposite. It interacts extremely well with auto recovery in that this will only be done in order to do a reification over something where a box method is being called, such that if we're doing auto recovery, either that was safe in the first place because it was transition, or it was ISO that was made safe through auto recovery.
Okay, so I will add a comment saying that this is saying that we talked about it and that it's that concern is alleviated, and then so it just needs the AST free that Benoit asked for before it can be finished.
Excellent. Sorry that took me so long to puzzle through.
It was amazing to listen.
So, Matthias, if you're up for sort of driving these and picking those up, that would be really great from my point of view. Are you up for it?
Yeah, I see what I can do. Yeah, I'm doing it.
All right, that's awesome. Thank you so much. Is anyone want to cover anything last minute before we sign off? All right, that's great. Thanks, everybody, for coming, and I'm going to hit stop. Good night, everyone.